Liron Hirschkorn here, your host of the E-Commerce Mindset Show. Should this be a show or a podcast? I don't know. I go back and forth. But welcome to this episode with Nathan Hirsch. He is the co-founder of FreeUp, a company that he built up and sold in the last year, and started another company called Outsource School. We talk about some interesting topics like he started three companies all with $5,000 or less. How he grew and scaled FreeUp and was able to exit, and had no US-based employees, 35 employees in the Philippines to scale that company. And at the end, we talk a little bit about his daily habits for success. I think you'll enjoy this interview where we talk about FreeUp, Outsource School, and how he's helping entrepreneurs now with the skills he developed in working with VAs, as well as daily habits of success. This episode is brought to you by IncrementumDigital.com. That's my sponsored ads agency, Amazon advertising agency, where we help you grow on Amazon, optimize your ads, implement things like DSP and videos, and all the latest ad types to help you grow your business. Now is a great time to think about your ad strategy for the coming massive Q4 that will be on Amazon. My email and the website are in the show notes. Enjoy this episode with Nathan Hirsch of Outsource School. Okay, so today we have Nathan Hirsch with us. Nathan Hirsch is a co-founder of FreeUp. He started out his career as an Amazon seller, then started, co-founded a company called FreeUp, recently sold that company and co-founded another business called Outsource School. Welcome to the show. I'm excited to have you on, Nathan. I think there's a lot that you have to share that people will be able to take away and implement.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I love just talking about scaling businesses and virtual assistants, remote hiring. So it should be a lot of fun.
So awesome. So let's start by kind of debunking a myth. You know, one of the things you just said to me before that I didn't know before we hit the record button was that every business that you've started, you started with $5,000. And I think so many people think that the biggest problem they have is a lack of resources, a lack of capital. If only I had $50,000, if only I had $100,000, if only I had an investor, only I had that. Sounds to me like that is actually false and maybe just excuses, because it's not just one business you got lucky with, it's multiple businesses. So what's your, you know, obviously, I think at this point in your career, you could start a business with more than that. Is that sort of intentional? Like, if I can't make it work with $5,000, I'm not going to make it work with 50.
Yeah, I think part of it's just my mentality. I'm a big fan of just minimum viable product and getting it out there as quickly as possible and getting feedback. And I think, I mean, you and I have been communicating since the beginning of the year when I started Outsource School, and you've probably heard me ask for feedback a million times and made a ton of tweaks along the way. And very similar, when I started with Amazon, I got into dropshipping before I even knew what dropshipping was. And at first, I didn't even have more than $5,000. So there wasn't even an option to spend more than that. And I started listing products and trying to build relationships with manufacturers in the US that would drop ship for me. And I pretty much took my sales money, the 10, 20 bucks I would make per sale, and I would invest that into eventually virtual assistants and systems and processes and stuff that would help me scale. And then when I started FreeUp, I was kind of at a point where I didn't know if FreeUp had a market. I knew that I didn't want to be an Amazon seller at that point. I had just gotten too frustrated with Amazon changing their algorithms and really messing up the dropshipping model. And I guess I could have gone into FBA, but I wanted to build my own brand and not be dependent on Amazon anymore. So I started FreeUp with $5,000, and $4,000 of it went into this minimum viable product, this crummy software that everyone hated that did very little, where freelancers could log into their account, clients could log into their account and see each other. And that was pretty much it. Like, none of the billing, none of the affiliates, like none of that was in there. It was all manual. And we just took it to market, and we told people, hey, we'll pre-vet the VAs and freelancers for you. We'll match them up. You'll use the software to record the time. And on the back end, we have great support and protection. And we really, if people didn't like that initial period, if we didn't get any customers in the first 2 to 3 months, we would have just shut it down and moved on to something else and been out $5,000. And again, when people started using it, we took that initial money to invest in virtual assistants. I'm a big proponent in using hiring to grow your business, and eventually invested into the software about a year later when we started to look at ourselves as a software company. And fast forward to today with Outsource School, I mean, just because you sell a company doesn't mean every idea that you come up with going forward is going to be a good one. So when we came up with the idea of Outsource School, we started with this first product, our Cracking the VA Code, which is our hiring system. We call it IOTM, Interviewing, Onboarding, Training, and Managing. And we wanted to teach people our exact process. And we had all these ideas. We wanted to create this membership site, that we wanted to have all these different playbooks and formulas on how to get on podcasts and how to do lead generation with VAs. We wanted to build an SOP building software. But if people didn't like that initial product, we're just going to, again, scrap it, lose our $5,000 and move on to something else. So we like to take stuff to market, listen to feedback. Fortunately, people have really liked our ideas, and then we kind of reinvest into hiring it and grow it from there.
Yeah. So, you know, it totally sort of, debunks the myth that, you know, that you need a lot of capital. Actually, this week I interviewed a seller on the podcast who started last year with $6,000. And was able to make it work, even though he got suspended his first month because he's in Dominican Republic and Amazon was trying to verify him and all this stuff. And he was able to do it. And I think the lesson is just get started. And sometimes, you know, I don't really believe that ignorance is bliss, but sometimes like what you don't know, like if you knew all the headaches of Amazon, you probably wouldn't have started. But you starting ultimately got you into free up, right? Into creating a solution for sellers.
Yeah. And I'm not saying don't go into Amazon. I mean, I know a lot of people that, including you, that make a good amount of money on Amazon. It was more of a personal thing for me. I had known Amazon, and if FreeUp had failed, I mean, the first place I was probably going is back to Amazon, because that's what I knew. And if I had tried to start my own brand, but there were some other situations too, where we had gotten like suspended and gotten it back. And we had like, there was just other people like coming in. So it was a lot of competition, and we didn't really know FBA. So we were drop shipping. So there were a lot of other factors there too, but I totally agree. I think a lot of people are in the mindset that you need $50,000, $100,000 to start a business. And I've seen so many people that they keep putting money into their company, and then they finally take it to market and no one wants their product and they're out that money or their service. And so I for me, it's all about, can you get sales early on? Can you prove the concept? Can you talk to your customers and get feedback? And only then do you invest money into your idea.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's almost like it's really the same with like launching products. I just have made this post, and I had somebody that asked me, it's the same with selling products. Like if your product gets some sales off the bat, you may have something viable. If it's an uphill battle from the start, you got to cut your losses. And it sounds like that was kind of your philosophy with business. Have there been things you've tried sort of since FreeUp that haven't worked, or was it just like you were in FreeUp, sold and started Outsource School? Have you sort of experienced that $5,000 and something not working?
So with my Amazon business, before I got to baby products, which was what I mainly sold, I tried a lot of different things and failed drop shipping them. Everything from outdoor sporting equipment to couches to video games. With regards to after FreeUp, I mean, once we sold FreeUp, the first conversation Connor and I had was, do we still want to work together? We had just worked together for 4 years. Were we sick of each other? And fortunately, he wasn't sick of me. I'm sure I'm a tough person to work with. And I wasn't sick of him. So it was like, all right, we want to keep doing something. What do we want to do? Do we want to take a year off? Do we want to get into real estate? Do we want to stay in the same outsourcing industry? Do we want to go do something else? And we started doing a lot of research. I read a ton of real estate books. I read a ton of books on just starting different businesses in general. We thought about investing and buying businesses. But then people started reaching out to us, asking if we could teach them our system, our process, which is how we came up with the idea of Outsource School. So there wasn't a $5,000 thing in the middle. We kind of slowly started working on Outsource School and starting to rule out other things that we just didn't want to do.
And it's almost like instead of going into, and I remember several months ago, I saw your post about, you know, asking about real estate and questions, but like almost like instead of going in that direction, like what's right under your nose, right? Like everything you did to not only help sellers and help businesses get VAs, And doing it yourself is like all the skill set that you use to build and grow a business. Like, let me just take that and start a business based off that concept in terms of how it can help sellers. Do you consider Outsource School a, you know, online training and education company, or do you consider it a software company? I know you've put out an SOP builder, you know, to help people build out, you know, SOPs. What's the mission, or what kind of company do you consider? Because I never thought of FreeUp as a tech company. Right. I thought about it as a place I go get a VA,
right.
As a service company. So obviously you positioned it or thought about it differently. So how do you sort of position Outsource School?
Yeah. So we look at it as a membership, and Outsource School gets divided up into a few different parts. You have the fundamentals, which we kind of talked about, the interviewing, the onboarding, the training, the managing. That's our cracking the VA code system. Then we have this shop of all these different SOPs, standard operating procedures around marketing or operating. And these are not niche specific. It's stuff like calendar management, having a VA run your inbox, getting on podcasts, doing lead generation, bookkeeping, stuff that applies to any business out there. And we have these SOPs ready to go that once you know the fundamentals, you can plug these into your business. You can learn the overall view, but you can give these to your VAs to actually train them and get them going. And then there's going to be SOPs that we can't teach you. And in cracking, we teach you how to create SOPs at a very high level. And you can then take our software, Simply SOP, and build your own SOPs via video, text. They're very dynamic. They're easy to update. You can share them with your team. So you've got the fundamentals, you've got all these pre-made SOPs, you've got a software to create your own SOPs, and you can get all three of these things separately. You can buy them one off a la carte on the website, or if you become an Outsource School Insider, which is our membership, you get access to all of that, plus our community of hundreds of entrepreneurs. There's some other small perks and bonuses. You get our support as well. But that's really the business model of Outsource School. It's directed towards a membership, but for people that don't want to be a member, you can get anything that you need.
There's a lot of good nuggets there, or like even like small things that, you know, we found to be helpful. One of the things we started doing in terms of how we implemented our SOPs based off the training was, instead of creating an hour long video, let's say showing, you know, a VA how to do something, creating videos in smaller chunks, found that helpful because for a number of reasons. One, I think just consuming something in 5-10 minutes allows you to watch a video, then you could take time later on to watch the next one and take it in chunks. But also, if something changes in your process, you may only have to change one of the videos, right? As opposed to, so like putting it into steps was something that I found to be, that we've implemented in our own business and SOPs in terms of how we do things as a result of the training. So there's a lot of nuances I think that you can pick up there that will help you, you know, structure things the right way. I want to ask you about partnerships. So you had a partner in FreeUp, you have a partner in Outsource School, obviously the same person, you obviously have a trust relationship, you're working together 4 years. Is there, you know, how should people look at that as far as like, should I bring on a partner? Should I start a business with a partner? Is it more of a, you know, is it a headache or a blessing? And I think sometimes it could probably be both, you know, depending on your partner. But like, and, you know, do you see yourself, you know, I was just reading Ryan Moran's book, 12 Months to a Million. He talks about how, you know, in a partnership, you need one visionary, one builder, and kind of like not both of you doing the same things. Is that kind of how you see both the partnership you had in FreeUp and in Outsource School divided?
Yeah, and Connor was part of the Amazon business too. So we've been working together like 10 years.
Wow.
It's funny because so I'm in the process of buying a house in Colorado, and Connor referred a real estate agent to me. And I was talking to the real estate agent. He's a great guy. And at the end, he's like, man, you and Connor could not be more different people. And this is someone who's worked with both of us now. And it's funny, Connor was actually my first employee in the Amazon business. So I posted a job on Facebook. I knew nothing about hiring. He responded to that post. He said, I don't know what you do, and I need a job. Didn't even interview him. I just hired him on the spot. And on his first day of work, he says, oh, by the way, I don't have a car. You need to come pick me up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, who is this guy? I don't want to pick him up every single day, but I had work I needed done. So I picked him up and drove him to, I had a frat house that I lived in, and I drove him back and forth. And those car rides ended up being key because in those car rides, we would talk and get to know each other, but we would talk business. And he learned a lot about entrepreneurship. And that's how we kind of learned that we have different skill sets, but the same values, and began to trust each other. And I eventually made him my partner. And I think that's one of the keys to our relationship is our values are exactly the same. We believe in treating people well. We believe in customer service above everything. We believe in asking for feedback and not taking feedback personally. We believe in owning up to our mistakes. Like, both of us are human. We make mistakes. We mess up. That's part of being an entrepreneur. But you own up to it and you fix it. You just make it right. No questions asked. So our values are the same, but we are totally different people. I'm a little bit more high energy. I talk fast. I'm rah-rah. I'm more of like the face that goes on podcasts. He's a calm, cool, and collective. Like, nothing ever sets him off. He's much more technical than I am. He builds all our WordPress. He works with our developers. I'm much more like the podcast, the sales, the customer service system, stuff like that. So we're totally opposite skill sets, and we divide and conquer very well. And not just divide and conquer with the work that we're doing, we divide and conquer with our actual team. So he runs our dev team. He runs our social media team. I run our customer service team. I run our sales team. So we are always looking at stuff to just divide and conquer and make sure that it follows under our expertise, while also knowing that we trust each other at the level that we're going to take care of our customers and grow the business the same way. There's also some other stuff, like we're both pretty frugal people. We believe in that lean startup, that minimum viable product, that $5,000. But that's the overall.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of good points there. It sounds like you do have that sort of opposite different sort of skill set. I think what you said is key as far as, sort of opposite or complementary skill sets, but a shared mindset, shared value system, and how you want to run the business. In my Amazon ads agency, I have a partner, and he was my first employee in the business. And I think it's sort of critical to what I've learned, at least, to date a little bit before you get married. And I think the reason why it worked for me is because I had the opportunity to work with somebody first for a period of time. And see, okay, this person is critical to my business. I want them to be able to get a partnership in the business. And I got a chance to really get to know them over time, as opposed to just, you know, getting into marriage with somebody, you know, right away. And very, very similar in terms of, you know, I find a lot of similarities with me. Like, I'm the one on the podcast and the sales and marketing, and Brian is a lot of the sort of maybe technical operations, systems, SOPs. He's the one that, sort of went through a lot of your material and helped implement that in our business. And is more of like the systems person. That's not my strong suit. Would you have, sort of advice to people that, you have all these trainings on creating systems and processes. If you don't feel like that's sort of you, are you better off just hiring somebody to implement that, or partnering somebody to implement that? Or should you, just buckle down, force yourself to go through it and implement?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you have a business partner that can do it, that's fantastic. Like you said, I agree in dating before you get married. Like, Connor was my employee for a while, where I built that trust before I worked with him. I don't think I would ever just like get off a few phone calls with someone and be like, hey, here's equity in my company. But that's more just me. I'm always scared when to give people the advice of like, go hire a systems person, have them build up your systems, because then people try to be like completely hands off, and you have this one person building all your systems. And then if that person could quit, and then like that person knows all of the systems of your business, and that's not going to fly. And usually, as an owner, unless you're just totally hands off, like high level strategy, which I'm assuming most people are not at that level yet, like, you have to be involved in the systems of your business at some point. And so I'm a big proponent of getting those systems on paper little by little. I'm not the kind of person to sit down for 8 hours and do anything, never mind just systems. Like, I won't record videos for 8 hours. I won't work on a project for 8 hours. I do stuff in very small chunks. So I'll brain dump for like 15 minutes one day, and then the next day brain dump again, and then organize it, and then brain dump again. And then you get 75% of that SOP done. And then you give it to a VA and you kind of test it out. And then I like to actually give ownership of the SOPs to the my team, to the VA. So my customer service team leader has ownership of that SOP. My billing team leader has ownership of that. And it's their job to make it better and improve it and keep it updated. Like when we went to sell FreeUp and they said, hey, how does customer service work? How does billing work? We had these 50-page SOPs that we handed over and they had been updated every month for the past 4 years and not by Connor and I, they were updated by our team. So mm-hmm. I think that's the ultimate goal, because as you get bigger, you and your business partner can't be writing every single SOP, but you still want to get involved in it. And I'm always hesitant, just like someone who's like, I don't like sales. So I'm just going to hire a salesperson from day one and they'll handle all the sales. To me, it's like, no, like you need to learn sales. You need to help come up with a system for sales, and then you can pass it off or pass off parts of it. And I feel like your systems are the same way. Whenever you just like hire an agency that runs all your systems and you have no idea what's going on, you're just one issue away from everything going into chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's good advice. So, you know, you were able to grow FreeUp as a business with a lot of VAs. Did you have US-based employees or was your entire team VAs? And how do, you know, most of the people listening to this that are in e-commerce, you know, how best can they utilize to really grow their business through virtual assistants?
So two fun facts about FreeUp. We had no office. We had no US employees. It was me, my business partner, Connor. We had a US developer who was part of the buyout and built our Simply SOP software now, and 35 VAs in the Philippines. And that was it. And we also spent zero money on ads over 4 years. So we have an organic marketing blueprint of podcasts and partnerships and backlinks and influencers and lead generation and content that we feel like can be applied to any business, with 95% of it done with VAs. And it's all stuff that we teach to our members at Outsource School and we're now doing with Outsource School. And I don't necessarily recommend not spending money on ads. We will be spending money on ads in Outsource School, but FreeUp was such a unique business model that we never really figured out ads, because people could sign up for free and use someone 3 months later and start and stop. It's just very tough to track ROI. Not impossible, but very hard. But yeah, I mean, yeah. I'm a firm believer in building businesses with virtual assistants. Like I firmly don't think you need US employees until you get to a certain level, or if you're trying to accomplish a certain thing. And even with Outsource School now, it's me, Connor, Russell, who's our developer, and a team of five people in the Philippines. And I mean, we have like some graphic designers that are in India and stuff like that, but the main full-time people are VAs in the Philippines.
And yeah, you know, I'm just thinking about, you know, for, you know, you think about 35 people in the Philippines for that sort of same payroll, you might have, you know, five to, you know, eight people, right, in the US. So like the amount of sort of human capital, human power you get through doing it, I think the biggest things that people have challenges with are, you know, this person's in the Philippines, they can't think for themselves, they want to follow just they only can follow instructions, right? Like and maybe that's just like a bad assumption, but you know, how do I really leverage that? Because yeah, if I could have 35 employees for the cost of, you know, five local or six local, that could make a massive difference in my business. But how do I sort of get, can I get the same performance out of a, you know, $4 to $7 an hour Filipino VA as I can out of a, you know, $20 to $30 US based employee?
Yeah. So let's take Anna, for example. Anna's my top VA right now. She's brand new. We hired her with Outsource School. She makes $8 an hour. And I'll be increasing that as Outsource School grows. And she just did we're testing out a program where our members get more of a roadmap. They get to meet with people on our team. And I just talked to someone who was meeting with Anna, and he essentially said, like, she's a rock star. Like, I couldn't believe I was talking to someone from the Philippines. I wish I could hire her. Like, I'm really pumped to get going. She's awesome. She answered all my questions. And I mean, we hire A players. Like, that's what it's all about. We're not there are certain things that we'll hire followers for. Like, we have a lead generation formula that we teach. You don't need an Anna $8 an hour person to do that lead generation. You can hire someone for $3 an hour and plug them in there. But I mean, everything that we preach in our interviewing, which we call our care method, and we teach you what interview questions to ask and what to look for, to our onboarding method, which is really the most important thing, because every entrepreneur messes up onboarding, which we call our SICK method, which stands for schedule, issues, communication, and culture. It's all about looking for the red flags up front, knowing exactly what you're looking for, the types of answers you're looking for, and spending extra time setting expectations and then holding people to those expectations afterwards. And if you do it the right way, you're going to scare away the people that don't want to be an Anna, that don't want to be an A player, that don't want to talk to clients and have to learn more. And we look for VAs that are focused on self-improvement and growth and want to be a part of something and don't want to just do the same task and go to their family and then do the same task and go to their family. So it's a kind of a different mindset that we try to get our members in, and we try to give them the processes to hire those type of people, because that's how you grow your business. If we had 35 $3 an hour followers, that business wasn't going very far. No one's buying that. Like, it needs to, at some point you need those team leaders and assistant team leaders. You can't have 35 people all reporting to Nathan.
Right. So you need to develop and also at some point hire higher level virtual assistants, right? Those who've had more experience, who have, and there's a lot of people in the Philippines that have also worked for some major brands, right? That outsource to the Philippines for the same reason. You know, a lot of people want to outsource to the Philippines. You get good quality English speakers and at a much lower cost. So you can actually find higher level virtual assistant. It's not all $3 to $5 an hour people.
Right. And it's the same thing. Some people mess up because they're like, oh, I read an article that says you should pay people $3 an hour. Like, that's what I'm going to pay. And it's like, no, right. Like, I'm not hiring Anna at $3 an hour. Like, that's just not happening. And so you have to be able to pick and choose and kind of understand what you're actually going for. And like I said, I have roles that I am hiring for $3 an hour because I have those systems down pat, whereas Anna's actually helping me build out these new programs and she's in charge of different projects. So it's kind of a different hiring experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about you have a podcast outsource formula. I think if anybody can sort of talk about this, it's you. I think you mentioned to me you were like on a podcast a day yourself. And I know one of the, you know, I remember seeing you when you were still with FreeUp, you got on like MentorBox, you know, which is obviously a huge program from Ty Lopez and Alex, like huge reach, right? And I think that was a big way in terms of how you built the business was getting out there. My thoughts are that every e-commerce owner should be out there on podcasts and on maybe having their own podcast and getting out there, even if you just sell physical products. There's a lot you could talk about. You know, what's sort of like the strategy? What are some tips people can take away to be able to get on, you know, podcasts that allow you to reach more people with your business?
Yeah, I'm a big proponent of podcasts. I agree with what you said. I always tell people, if you're not going on a podcast a week, you're missing out. I mean, you don't have to go crazy like me. With FreeUp, there was a week where I went on 5 podcasts a day, 5 days in a row, which was like the tipping point for me. And then I realized I have to do a better job managing my time. And now I go on 1 podcast a day. My VA sets a hard rule and I'm booked out till like September. So not on weekends, but Monday through Friday. And podcasts are great for a lot of reasons. First of all, they're great for networking. If you want to know the best people in your space, be on their podcast, talk to them before. Don't just show up, record and leave. Talk to them before, talk to them after. It's great for getting in front of thousands of people at once. I mean, you can go after single clients, single leads all day long, but there's a benefit to getting in front of thousands at a time. It's great for growing your brand. We talk about touch points a lot. Sometimes people need to hear about you 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times before they buy from you. And I've had people that say, hey, I heard you on 3 different podcasts. And then I became a member of Outsource School, or then I used FreeUp. It's good for backlinks and SEO. I don't think enough people think about that. Just getting on different people's sites. It's good for a snowballing effect that leads to bigger and bigger podcasts, Facebook group lives, summits, guest speaking opportunities, if we're ever allowed to do stuff in person again. But yeah, I mean, I'm a firm believer that you should be doing that. And I made kind of a mistake where I was constantly doing podcast research, and I like to have a VA now just do the research and send me a list before I wake up a podcast that I should go on. And I set certain rules with my podcast, unless they're like a personal friend or someone that was like a good affiliate with FreeUp or someone that I know is like an influencer. I really don't go on podcasts that have less than 100 episodes. So it's kind of been my rule. And there's a reason for it. It's not to kind of be rude. It's because I've been on podcasts that are on episode 19. And by the time they get to episode 35, the podcast host decides he doesn't want to have a podcast anymore. And then it's just a waste of my time. So that's kind of one rule for me. I found that iTunes reviews and number of downloads and stuff like that can all be manipulated, and they're not the best teller for it. I've also been on big podcasts that accomplish very little in terms of ROI, although you still get a backlink, which is nice. And I've been on smaller podcasts. The one that comes to mind is Quiet Like Brokerage, which is probably bigger now, but at the time that I went on it, it wasn't very big. And it was just very specific. It was for people looking to buy businesses, which is very relevant for FreeUp because those people wanted to hire to make their systems better before they sold. So that small podcast blew up for FreeUp. So for me, it's I try to set certain specifications, and obviously making sure your niche makes sense as well is a big part of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think the networking part of it is really good, especially if you have a podcast, because it's a great excuse, right, to have an hour conversation with somebody that you would probably never have on the phone if it wasn't for having a podcast. But yeah, interesting that you bring up these things, because I was just talking to my team about implementing the podcast outsource formula for myself. I don't do any outreach to, you know, like I'll get on somebody else's podcast if like they ask me, right? So I don't do any outreach currently to get on podcast, and you know, I should, right? I can get out there more with my business. And so we were trying to think of like, yeah, what should be the criteria? Is it a minimum amount of like iTunes, you know, podcast reviews? Is it a minimum number of episodes? Like what should be that, you know, criteria? And you know, sort of like 100 episodes is like, yeah, you know, somebody's serious about their podcast if they've consistently put out episodes. I think years ago I took actually a podcast course before I even got into Amazon actually, and I think the guy said like the average person stops after, you know, before they reach like the seventh episode,
right?
You know, in terms of like starting a podcast. So I think, you know, I think every physical product owner, the majority of people listening to this in e-commerce, can get on. I mean, even if I sold a barbecue glove, right, I would do all the research on, you know, right now is the summertime, you know, on grilling at home and tips and recipes and something, you know, and I would reach out to all those kind of shows. And then, yeah, then I get to promote like, hey, I have the highest heat barbecue gloves, so you don't burn your hands when you when you're out there on the barbecue and create these recipes. And, you know, here's a code for a discount to go buy it. Like, even if you had such a generic product, right, like you can come up with content and get your brand out there. What are your thoughts, Nathan? This is, I don't think necessarily this is part of like podcast outsource, but like, what are your thoughts on, you know, podcast as an advertising medium, meaning sort of like sponsoring podcasts? Is that something you said you haven't used any paid ads, but I would think also, you know, with Outsource School, for example, there's so many business podcasts, right, that you could probably go and sponsor and get the word out. Do you think you'd just rather, let me just try to get on this podcast as opposed to, you know, going and paying for an ad on the podcast?
Yeah, great question. And just for people trying to find it, it's called the podcast outreach formula. If anyone Googles that, not the podcast outsource formula, but okay. So yeah, it's tough. And this is what I found with sponsorships. The top podcasts, like the Mixer G's of the world, the How I Built This, whatever it is, like they have pretty expensive podcast sponsorship programs. Yep. Like people like Zillow and like big companies like that are going to sponsor those podcasts. Pretty tough to get into those. And a lot of the smaller podcasts, they're not worth sponsoring just in terms of listeners. And in the middle ones, I've found they're just very – they don't like have their sponsorship down to like packages that make sense, that are that kind of justify ROI. And we were actually kind of experimenting with that, because I said we didn't spend money on paid ads. We did spend money on sponsorships. I know you and I ran into each other at conferences. Yes. So we sponsored lots of different stuff, and we were just experimenting with sponsoring podcasts. Like towards the end before we sold FreeUp. So that probably was our next move, just because I mentioned paid ads was hard. So sponsorships kind of is that replacement to it. It is possible. It's just you kind of need to find that the up and coming podcast is really right. What you're going for. That's very, you want to make sure that it really is your core audience. And the other thing I've done is I've paid to go on a few podcasts, not a ton, maybe 5, 6, 7 that wouldn't have had me on. They only accept paid guests, but we did a lot of research to make sure it was worth it. So it definitely needs to be explored more. I'm not sure I'm the top person to speak on it.
Yeah, I was gonna ask. Yeah, if it's sort of like worth it, but I guess if there's a good audience, it's worth it. It's kind of interesting that people charge, a guest, if you want to, right, that charge. But I guess they need to monetize their show in some kind of way if that's like their kind of thing that they're doing. So I want to actually jump into talking to you about some personal stuff. But before we jump there, talk a little bit about the new program you have. What's available to people? How do people go about participating? And I give my endorsement. I'm in it, and I think there's a lot of things there that are very worthwhile. And one of the things I've seen you do is continue to just add stuff and say, hey, we're just giving, like, you bought this, but now we're adding this and we're just giving it to you, which I think is a great way to do business and be very focused on your customers. So what's the kind of offer with Outsource School, and like these other things are all included, right? From my understanding, the Scaling with VA program, the podcast outreach formula, the SOP builder software. What's the kind of makeup of the program?
Yeah. So you get access to everything. You get cracking the VA code. You get all of our SOPs, playbooks, formulas. You get first access to every new one that we come out with. We usually come out with one or two a month, and we give it to our members before we put it for sale on our site. And you get free access to our software, Simply SOP. And if you become an Outsource School insider, which right now is $9.97 a year, that price will probably go up. But that's how you become an insider. And you have a coupon too. I'll let you put that with the podcast. You can also divide that up into four payments, no interest for over 4 months. And yeah, you get access to everything. And we're constantly coming up with new ideas. It's one of my favorite parts of business. And some new ideas we're working on. I mentioned this beta program where you can actually meet with our team and we'll help you map out what modules, what cheat sheets, what stuff you should do in what order that makes sense for your business. And another cool thing that we'll be launching is having someone actually help you transfer your SOPs to our software. And if you don't like our software, we'll help you transfer it off. But because that's always a big thing for someone, is just the actual initial process. But we want to show you how awesome our VAs are and how quickly they can help you do that. And we really know use our software, they'll get a lot out of it as well. So we're constantly trying to add these additional perks, whether it's discount with our partners, some $50 free up credit that we give out, introducing you to our reps there. But the main part of it is you get access to cracking the VA code, all of our SOPs and our software, plus our community, and then the extra perks as well.
Nice. So the code you'd asked me before, like, hey, I'm going to create a code for your listeners. So it's Liran, LIRAN 10. Gives you 10% discount. What's the link? Is it Outsource School, or what's the link to go to find all the info?
Yeah, if you go to Outsource School, you can actually grab free trials of being an Outsource School insider and a free trial of our software. But if you go to outsourceschool.com/insider, that's the direct link that'll take you to use the code and become an insider.
Okay, excellent. So, this wouldn't be the e-commerce mindset show without a little bit of mindset. I follow you. I follow your stories. And I see that, you aren't just killing it, working, but you are killing it working out. And I think you have certain, what is kind of like your routine, just like from a, sort of personal standpoint, to be able to execute in your business and, you mentioned you're moving now to Colorado. That's pretty cool. I think you were in Florida. You have, a family, obviously, I think your wife, right? You're married, from my understanding.
Fiance, but yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, what are like the habits that you sort of incorporate into your life in order to, just be balanced and also be able to be good at running the business? Because I think for a lot of people that maybe see you out there, you're on a lot, right? You're on a lot of podcasts. You work, you put in the time, you put in the effort, but you also do other things to kind of maintain a balance.
Yeah, so I will also add that since I sold FreeUp, my lifestyle is a lot different, and I've really focused on creating my ideal day. And what my ideal day looks like is I'm most productive from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. So I wake up, I walk the dogs from 6:30 to 7. From 7 to 9 a.m., I'm doing whatever my most important thing is that day. Then I'm taking a break to work out. I do 1 hour intense workouts 6 days a week. I'm not a big proponent of dieting, but I eat 95% vegetarian. I never eat fast food. I don't drink soda. But outside of that, I don't count calories at all. I like sweets. I like great food. And then after that 1 hour workout, I usually do my one podcast of the day. I found that for whatever reason, I like doing my one podcast between like 11 and 1. So you're my one podcast today.
Yep.
And then from there, I do phone calls in the afternoon from that 1 to 3. And usually by 2:33, I'm done. And when I'm doing these calls, and this is why I try to avoid Zoom calls, is I want to be out of my office. I want to be walking the dogs out in the park, usually not home when I'm doing those phone calls or I'm talking to Connor, or whatever it is. So that's kind of how I like to structure my day. And yeah, I don't know if that answered your question.
And do you, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, do you shut down at a certain time? You said like 3 o'clock, you're sort of like done. I mean, are you like 7 to 3 and then the rest of the day is like, you know, sort of free to do like personal things, or are you working later than that?
Yeah. So I have a few things that I don't know if you'd consider them work. They're more like personal things I want to learn. So one, I'm learning Vietnamese, which is not work. But wow. I'm also going through my fiance is Vietnamese, but I'm also going through Roland Fraser's EPIC program, which is all about mergers and acquisitions. So that recently has been taking my time. So I'll do that after 3. I also read once a day. So I'll read for 20, 30 minutes. And then I always have one new skill that I'm trying to kind of learn at the time in small chunks. So I mentioned I like to do things in like 15 minute chunks. So right now I'm learning copywriting. So I'm taking, I'm just spending 15 minutes on that. I try to learn enough to be dangerous so I can just create a system for someone else to do it. That's like my overall mentality.
That's funny. I'm also learning copywriting. I'm in copywriting course. I don't know if you're in the same one. It's with a KK copywriting course. That's where I'm learning some copywriting, but I'm really enjoying it. And for me, it's just like, I just like, you know, the art of marketing and copywriting. I'm not learning it to specifically monetize. I just know it's helpful and it's useful, you know, in sort of everything I do. But yeah, so that's a really great, you know, schedule. You take time every day to focus on the most important thing in the morning, exercise, and, you know, then also like for personal sort of growth and learning. And I think, you know, as you listen to this, these habits are actually, right, like the thing that makes you successful, that consistent daily habits, not this one magical idea or thing, right, like that, or talent per se. It's just these like small daily things you do every single day that like, you know, have this like cumulative long-term effect. You know, if you write, you know, 5 handwritten notes a week, you know, to people, by the end of the year, you'll send out 300, you know, notes to people and like build relationships. Or if you're on one podcast a day, you're going to end up on a couple hundred podcasts a year, right? And that's how you get that massive reach and success. So it's a good lesson there in terms of, because I follow you. I try to do the same. I don't always exercise every day, but I try to be consistent every single week, at least, you know, 3 to 4 times. And I don't read every single day, but on the weekend, I'll take, you know, reading and, you know, 2-3 hours at a time and get my reading in and do the things that I know that it takes to be, you know, to build good habits. And I think that's, you know, really, really important, you know, to implement in your business. So Nathan, thanks so much for coming on. Just lastly, how can people sort of follow you? I imagine a lot of people listening to this already follow you, but how do people, you know, sort of follow what you're doing, what you're putting out, like on social media?
Yeah. So first of all, go to astroschool.com, check out our free trials, but feel free to connect with me on Facebook, LinkedIn, Nathan Hirsch, Instagram, Twitter, Real Nate Hirsch. We put out content every single day. And I love networking with other entrepreneurs. I love just connecting. If I can help you in any way, even if it has nothing to do with virtual assistants, just reach out to me.
Great. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. I will see you on the next episode of the E-commerce Mindset Podcast. Follow up with any questions, comments, feedback on the Facebook group E-commerce Mindset. The link is here in the show notes, and I will see you on the next episode.